It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Let's do some radio. Here we go, off and running on the 27th day of May, 2021. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. If you want to listen to the podcast, or if you want to listen live, for that matter, it's the best place to go. There's lots of other means, but generally speaking, as Brother Bishop Steve in Georgistan has pointed out, it's very nearly bulletproof. Yeah. Hi, I'm Robin. And it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and if you would like to augment your live listening experience when the program is live, you know, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Time, well, run on over to HeadOn.live and click on Chat Room if you've never done it before. Well, just pick yourself out a screen name and a password and jump in. Any way you want to do is fine, and you'll be immediately greeted by the likes of early arrivers Roger in Oregon, Squeaky, and Stockton Larry, who very kindly did, too, have a show on knees in order to get our terrifying fundraising goal to end May substantially down, and that makes life a lot less stressful. So thanks very much to that. Of course, if you do pop in, you'll be capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who wisely has chosen, although he is a third stage guild navigator, has wisely chosen not to fold space and become man cave, because it's 89 today where Sparky is, 96 tomorrow, and 106 degrees by Sunday. Whew! That's some hot. But you know what? For me, beats the hell out of winter. But maybe not there. I don't know. Every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So thanks go out to our subscribers on the 27th day of the month over at PayPal. And that means thanks most kindly to our buddy Robert in Australia. Thanks so very much. And thanks as well to Max. Thank you, Max, for jumping in. That means our fundraising goal is at $375. Mm-hmm. That's it. $375 for today, and then two more days of May. So what would that be? $675? $975 to finish the month. May as well just make it a lump sum. But $375 gets us even at the end of the program. So thank you very much, Max. And thanks to everybody who keeps this program on the air. As noted, it is Thorn in the Side Thursday. And we have no small number of thorns to deal with. Oh, my God, of course not. But let's begin where we begin. Shoot down the NRA. Robin! On this day in 1861, Judge Roger Taney, sitting as a federal... You'll remember, he's the guy who authored the Dred Scott decision, the dreadful Dred Scott decision. Sitting as a federal judge of the circuit court in Baltimore, Maryland, ruled that President Abraham Lincoln lacked the authority to suspend the writ of habeas corpus, But Lincoln disregarded the ruling, knowing full well that the ruling was just a ploy to protect the Southern slave owners. Of course, Taney was the judge that ruled against Dred Scott, maintaining that Scott was not a full human being with this, and this was likely sweet revenge for Lincoln following the Dred Scott decision. With some humane thoughts, Jeffrey steps forward.
Well, speaking of suspending habeas corpus and not being a human being, didn't Dick Cheney suspend habeas corpus in Guantanamo Bay, and he's definitely not a human being?
Well, that's a valid point, Jeffrey. Considering the conversation concerning the latest shooting in San Jose. And hey, there was another shooting today. We're running about 1.5 mass shootings per day in America through 2021. But Jeffrey has some good news.
Yes, I'm excited to announce that the NRA was struck down by the Supreme Court on this day in 1935. With that in mind, maybe the NRA can be shot down again someday soon.
There's NRAs and there's NRAs, Jeffrey. I mean, you're right. The NRA was struck down by the Supreme Court on this day in 1935. But the High Court struck down the National Recovery Act put forth by FDR because, well, there are a bunch of godforsaken Republicans sitting on that court. And they struck down FDR's executive effort to staunch the hemorrhaging brought about by the Great Depression, which in turn itself was brought about by, wait for it, sure, fill in the blank, Republicans. But, you know, Jeffrey said there's not, well, no, it's hard to convince sometimes that giraffe.
These Republicans were stupid idiots then because they struck down a key component of FDR's New Deal legislative program that was intended to help the country recover from the Depression. They continue to be stupid idiots today because they will not strike down this current NRA, which is killing the country, literally. These thorn-in-the-side Thursday morons are total hypocrites as they contended that the National Recovery Act back in 1935 would have given the executive branch too much power. For you maggot morons, the executive branch would be the President of the United States. Funny, the right wing has not been too concerned about giving the executive branch too much power when Dictator Donnie was in office.
Excellent points all, Jeffrey. We talked a little bit about the completion of the Brooklyn Bridge earlier this week, back in 1874, and Matt in San Francisco will be happy to hear that on this day in 1937, the newly completed Golden Gate Bridge connecting San Francisco to Marin County, California, was open to pedestrian traffic. Vehicles began crossing the next day. I love the Golden Gate Bridge, as I've crossed that bridge at least 25 times in recent years, going over to one of my favorite places on Earth, Sausalito. The last time I was there, last year, I took Giraffe over the bridge, and of course, Giraffe just loved the bridge because it was so high. Giraffe, meanwhile, has food porn on his mind. Hey, Matt in San Francisco, the next time Joey and I are in town, won't you and your husband join us for dinner at our favorite restaurant, Scoma's, in Sausalito? Well, that was a very sweet offer. Speaking of food porn, let us salute a cook, and that would be none other than Doris Dory Miller of Waco, Texas. Doris Miller was a cook aboard the USS West Virginia, and he became the first black person to receive the Navy Cross for displaying extraordinary courage and disregard for his own personal safety during the attack on Pearl Harbor. All told, Miller received 7 awards, including the Purple Heart, but he was never able to get a VA loan, not because of the disgusting racism that did not entitle black soldiers the same rights as whites during the time period, but because Doris Miller sacrificed his life for this country as he was killed in action in 1943 at Kiribati. And Jeffrey has a fighting thought. Ironically, today I think we mentioned two cowards, Donnie Trump and Dick Cheney. Instead of going to war, serving their country, and accumulating awards, they sat home and accumulated deferments. Yeah, one of the little deferments is sitting in the Congress to this day. We mentioned a really bad person who died at 99 yesterday. Well, today another really bad person took one more step toward 99 as... Oh, dear God, Henry Kissinger turns 98 today. Well, at least Kissinger, for all the bad, did serve in the U.S. Army during World War II. And, Robin, you'll enjoy this one, as on this day in 1974, U.S. Representative to New York, Bella Abzug, introduced the nation's first gay rights bill in Congress. It would amend the Civil Rights Act of 1964 to include lesbian, gay, bisexual, and, yes, trans Americans. Battling Bella, you were the greatest. And this has been Joey's Journal for Thorn in the Side Thursday, May the 27th, with Giraffe. Wishing that Dick and Donald, or Donald Dick, yes, wishing the duo of Donald Dick, go jump off a bridge. And the
$10 battling Bella challenges on the table. Thank you to Joey and Giraffe. Thank you so very much. And, right there. Matt heard you, Joey. The Golden Gate Bridge, my grandfather was a worker who helped build the Golden Gate Bridge. And responds, Joey and Giraffe, dinner at Skoma's anytime. Oh, my. I must know more about this Skoma's establishment. It sounds like a fantastic place. My particular hang-up in the... Because I've never had much time there, but... Oh, my great heavenly days. I do so love Swan's Oyster Depot there. Quite possibly the freshest seafood I've ever eaten in my life. I have a further correspondence from Matt. Matt wrote just a little bit earlier today. Today is a day off from work. I slept in and woke up to hate watch The View, which was interrupted by the local news coverage of the VTA shooting in San Jose. I recognized the rail yard as I've driven past it many times after visiting one of my stores from my previous job. The body count rose to 9 as another employee died overnight from his injuries. The leadership of the Valley Transit Authority, focused on the employees killed, had pictures of each person killed. Their supervisors gave a snapshot of what each person was like. Basically, nice, normal folks who went to their union job every day and ensured the transit line operated safely and people got to where they needed to go on a daily basis. They talked about how they had conducted active shooter training in the very yard earlier this year, so it's a strong possibility that the shooter attended that very training. You'll notice that Matt refers to him as the shooter, as compared with, say, National Petroleum Radio, who yesterday referred to him as the disgruntled employee. And it never even occurred to me that most workplace shootings are perpetrated by someone who works there. Probably my own way of getting through the absurdity of conducting the training was to barrel through and not dwell on why we've grown so accustomed to mass shootings that we now train people on what to do when the shots start ringing out. All those killed were men, some with 10 or 20 plus years of working there. Just people who woke up, went to work, and were mowed down by a co-worker with 2 automatic handguns and 11 rounds found on him after he shot himself when confronted by the police. He fired, I will add parenthetically, according to law enforcement there, he fired 39 rounds. But as Matt notes, we are a sick society. Then the regular news came on, and more was revealed about the shooter. History of domestic abuse. An ex-wife and ex-girlfriend saying he had a temper. The ex-girlfriend had some type of legal action against him for abuse and rape. This followed by a neighbor's video of him going to work that morning with a duffel bag and then video of his house on fire after he left for work. You know, that house on fire part, I will add parenthetically again. There is an old, and I mean, it's a historical fact. It's not supposition. It's not anecdote. When Cortez invaded the Valley of Mexico, he landed at what is now pretty much Veracruz. And his ships sat there, at least theoretically, waiting for him to turn around and go home. But when he realized that, when Cortez realized what he was up against, he burned his ships. And that was when his invading gang of thugs and criminals realized that they either had to conquer or die, that there would be no going home. And I thought of that when I saw the news that the murderer in San Jose had burned his house down. That was his signal
to himself, perhaps, that there would be no going back. And again, as Matt noted, we are a sick society. Anyway, after that, after Matt saw that bit of news, the neighbor's doorbell video showing him leaving and then the house burnt down, Matt says, then an interview with an employee who said the shooter intended to kill more, that the shooter walked past certain people and shot others. Everyone shot was killed, so apparently the shooter must have practiced shooting in order to get to a place where he was such a good shot that every hit was lethal. The additional ammo found on him, an indication of his intent to keep on shooting. What is wrong with our society that our political leaders seem to be okay with tens of thousands of us killed each year by gun violence? Why do I never hear anyone actually quote the full Second Amendment, you know, the part about a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state? Just because of a right-wing Supreme Court decision, ignoring that little detail and saying everyone gets a gun, we now have to live with the real possibility that we can leave our house and be mowed down by an awful gun owner. I recently purchased an earbud that looks like a hearing aid, so when I go to the gym, I can work out and listen to podcasts or music, but still have the ability to hear if shots are fired. When in public, shopping, working out, etc., I look for where the exits are and what direction would be the quickest way out. It's become a habit, and that is just really sad. In closing, Matt says, I don't know what the answer is. I know this is just really, really sad. And it is. This is one of the, I'm a little bit fussy about using the word tragic, but I'm comfortable with that here. These ambush massacres, I think we need to include the word ambush so that the pasty-faced, doughy militia members can understand, or maybe begin to understand, that they don't have a chance because they're ambushes. Anybody who ever did patrol duty in Vietnam, or Ramadi, or Fallujah, or in the Hindu Kush, understands the nature of ambush. But it is, it's tragically sad, Matt. And the reason that I'm comfortable using the word tragic is because in its original meaning, the word tragic implies a certain amount of, and I do not mean this on the part of the victims, it is a national tragedy. And to reiterate, who have not heard me say it before, it is my understanding from the ancient Greek that the word tragedy, what they described, and tragedy in their theater was a very specific thing, and it had specific rules. Aristotle even went so far as to lay them out in his dramatics. One of the unities of Greek tragedy is that the tragic hero, if you will, the protagonist, say, for instance, Oedipus, that's the easiest, is that he has a tragic flaw of which he is utterly oblivious. And you can find it if you go through the extant scripts of Greek tragedy, you can identify them pretty clearly. You know, in the case of Oedipus, his tragic flaw was that he was doing the best that he could as king of Thebes, but he didn't know that he had got an entire royal family on his mother, and hence Oedipus complex. And that's what comes back around to, to bite him. And I think that we can say that this country has a tragic flaw. What else is our fetish, our obsession with guns, but a tragic flaw? Is it not a tragic flaw that we have so many millions of Americans with so many tens of millions of guns who walk around thinking that those guns are going to protect them, that those guns are going to save them, when all of these things are ambushes where they're never even going to get a chance to get off a first shot because the nature of an ambush is that the other guy shoots first? A tragic flaw is often a manifestation of cluelessness. And how much more clueless could we be than to have a bunch of pasty-faced, doughy white guys running around thinking they're going to stop the next one, or if it ever comes to them, they'll by God be ready. When in point of fact, all it is a fetish. These right-wingers hoot and holler about, I'm defending. And perhaps the most broad definition of our tragic flaw is this notion that we are free and that we have liberty. Sit, liberty, sit. Because our freedom, such as it is rather oddly defined. Owning a gun is freedom. Letting the people, or creating a society in which the people own the guns, can, in the distance that it takes for the trigger to cause the firing pin to release and strike the cap of the cartridge and kill 9 people, well, yeah, that's freedom. But we don't have the freedom to tell the people who think that's freedom not to do that, or to try to do anything to prevent them from doing that. And of course, one of the other unities of Greek tragedy is hubris. The foolish pride that allows the tragically flawed protagonist to be oblivious to the flaw. We got freedom. Fat dead Tony Scalia done told us so. Because he done said in that there hellacious decision that all that militia language was just old. That's just old language. And fat dead Tony must have known, because, well, hell, fat dead Tony was a constitutional originalist. And he knowed all about the Constitution. For my money, the Heller decision proves the fraudulent nature of originalism. Because the original intent of the framers, which was to, create militias that could, go and hunt and gun down indigenous people. Wow. That was then. That ain't now. But it is a tragedy. And Matt said that our political leaders seem to be okay with tens of thousands of us killed each year by gun violence. And I don't know about you, Matt, but the politicians who persist in making sure that we have no laws to try to prevent this, they aren't my political leaders. Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, is not my political leader. Mitch McConnell, who happily accepted awards from Confederate sympathizers and stood in front of the devil's diaper, the flag of treason, he's not my political leader. All he is a senator for like 1.4 million ignorant and equally vicious Kentuckians. That's it. Joe Manchin's not a political leader. Not mine. He may be my senator, but he's not my political leader. All the bend the knee, you know, precious Lindsey Graham, they are not my political leaders. They're just people who cash checks from the National Ruble Association. That's all. And so it's sad, but it's also encouraging because of one thing, and that's this. It's instructive that it is such a small number. Because if we can get rid, if we can find a way in these godforsaken states to get rid of just a few of these Republican senators and make sure that we keep the Republicans at bay in the House, we can do something. This is not anywhere, dealing with gun violence in the United States is not anywhere near as complicated as going to the moon, and we did that several times. Hell, it's not even as hard as developing solar energy. Or building a bridge that connects San Francisco to Marin County. Or a series of dams that stop flooding. These are all things we have done. And we can do this too, if we can just be, if we can just convince enough of our countrymen to help us get rid of the, well, the Tommy Tubers of the world and the Mitch McConnells and the John Cornholios and the Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed booger-eating future king of Americas, all of those. So we are not without help. Am I hearing you right? Megan asks, yet another guy doing interpretive dance with red flags was missed by the authorities. That is a great line. Another lawful gun owner doing interpretive dance with red flags and was missed by the authorities. Yup. And still managed to kill people because no discernible reason. Tell me again how the preemptive shooting of black people for hanging air fresheners and playing with toy guns is supposed to keep us safer. Because I can't fucking see it, Megan says, and she's right. And by the way, they did put up the photographs this morning of the people that the murderer, the people who's, for whom the murderer destroyed the universe. Yeah. Couldn't help noticing that one of them had the last name of Singh, and it was pretty obvious to me that he was wearing the mandatory headgear of the Sikh faith. There were several men whose names ended in vowels. Just looking at the photos, I counted three white guys out of nine. So, 66% of the victims were of some ethnicity other than white. Could that be a clue? Two or three of them were north of 60, which meant that they were close to retirement age. Is there any talk of investigating this as a hate crime? Because, again, it appears that the murderer shot quite carefully. Jeremy in Vermont says the latest ambush shooter in the rail yard wasn't happy enough with the people he may have had the chance to kill in the yard to the extent he set his house on fire and putting more lives in danger, mainly more first responders. Yeah, maybe in addition to sending a message to himself that there'd be no going back, Maybe he meant to start a fire. It's California. That would have killed hundreds, if not thousands, more, or rendered them homeless. Yep, you're right, Flavio, with the correction. Aristotle talked about the dramatic unities in his Poetics, not Dramatics. You're absolutely right. I know, because I read Aristotle's Poetics in college. So did I. Not in Greek, but we regret the error. What does it say about me, Steve in New York asks? I just don't care anymore about these shootings. They're as much a part of life here as the sunrise and sunset. In the same way that I avoid the sun so as not to get sunburned, I avoid those incidents and situations the best way I can, or at least the best I can. Just don't care. Frankly, my take is this. If it didn't happen to a family member, friend, or me, it didn't happen. I look at the assault I recently experienced as just a part of life here. That's why I didn't call the cops and even scoffed at people who said I should do so. I think you've crossed a line, Steve, into, and that's not a criticism, that's not me being mean, into a sort of cynical bitterness. And a lot of us have. Every time one of these things happens and I talk about it on the air, I follow it anymore with the idea that, as horrifying, infuriating, heartbreaking as they all are, we're not gonna do shit about it. At least not as long as there are the Mitch McConnells of the world, the Joni Ernsts of the world, the Shelley Moore Capitos of the world, the Rand Paul libertarian ophthalmologists of the world, the Ron Johnsons of the world, the Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz anointed booger-eating future king of Americas of the world, the John Cornholios, the... whoever those two creeps in Mississippi are, the Tommy Tubers of the world, the turncoat Richard Shelbys of the world. How about that? I don't have to name two Republican senators in Georgia. And therein lies the hope. What I just said a few minutes ago, it can happen. All we have to do is want it badly enough. And organize desperately enough. So rather than being insolvable, work on that, would you, Flavio? Rather than being without a solution, and rather than just saying, oh, well, ho-hum, it happens, it isn't like the sunrise or the sunset. It isn't a function of natural law. It isn't a function of how the universe works. It, like every other bad thing that happens in the United States of America, is a function of some choice that we have made as a nation somewhere back up the line. And decisions made can be unmade. That is all I have in the way of hope. And it's not even hope. It's just an observation of actual fact. Okay? I apologize, by the way, for all the blips. I wish I knew why they were there. But, oh well. And I know I was off the air for a second, but Brother Deacon Asa was on it lickety-split, and I, as soon as I saw it, I was able to restart the stream. Hell, this even happens to the major gajillion-dollar networks sometimes. It's the Internet. Internet weather, I suppose. But there was... Stephen New York says, you know what's really shitty? You had Republicans in the House chamber who had to erect barricades to keep gunned up people out, and that wasn't even enough to get them to budge on guns or a fucking 1-6 commission. Yeah, I know. And now, my senator, Joe Manchin, is making noises with his mouth eater. It's sad to the point of laughability. There's no excuse for any Republican to vote against this commission, since Democrats have agreed to everything they asked for. Mitch McConnell has made this his political position, thinking it'll help his 2022 elections. They do not believe the truth will set you free, so they continue to live in fear. Well, this is one of those Book of James, New Testament moments. Faith without works is dead, Joe. Got to do something, Joe. Got to lean on them. You want all this bipartisanship, go find you some bipartisans. And if they refuse to do it, that ain't on you. Then you are free to go and vote your conscience. You have done everything you could possibly do. You have gone above and beyond in search of the great Senate bipartisan unicorn, Joe. Abandon the hunt. Do the right thing. At least relative to the January 6th commission. It seems eminently sensible to me. I don't know. Our buddy Irish Dave says, I got your terrifying right here. I regret to tell you the first thing that tore through my mind today was the vague memory of addressing both the postal money order. Yeah. don't worry. Hopefully they'll figure it out because there's no Berkeley, West Virginia. There's a Berkeley Springs, but if you got the zip code right, you're good. So I will let you know as soon as it arrives. I think we'll bet on the zip code. Thanks. I'll keep an eye out. By the way, Randy Radar says, it is what conservatives do. They create the conditions that they supposedly deplore. For example, when a bankster redlines a district, they starve it for capital, and then, as pointed out by the movie The Boys in the Hood, the only two chunks of capital allowed in are liquor stores and gun stores. As a result, there goes the neighborhood, and of course the conservatives get to say that the situation is all the fault of those people. Yeah. Reminds me of something that our pal Reverbo said to me by a message earlier today. Reverbo said, new Kennedy Medal awardee Mitt, whose brilliant idea was that? Giving Bishop Willard Romney the Kennedy Medal. New Kennedy Medal awardee Mitt Romney can't resist the opportunity to perpetuate the canard that Democrats have an antipathy to free enterprise. And I'm just trying to figure out how it is that you're born on third thinking you hit a triple. You've never had to actually work a day in your life. You missed Vietnam because you were part of the Mormon Bicycle Brigade that was saving Paris from the inscrutable Viet Cong. And somehow you think you have participated anywhere along the way in free enterprise when all you've done was run a hedge fund that bought distressed companies and destroyed the lives of its workforce. And then had the nerve to talk about 47% of the country being takers. And then talked about how you had binders full of women. Yeah, miss me with your Democrats hate free enterprise bullshit, Willard. Matt asks, with regard to Joe Manchin, do you think the 1-6 commission issue is enough to push Manchin to eliminate the filibuster? Or is Joe just making noises with his pie hole? Well, what I read to you there was an actual statement by Joe Manchin that was published on his Twitter feed. And I can't see it. Eliminating the filibuster, I don't think Joe will ever do that on a blanket basis. Is going to happen. Because there's a tactic that he has used for years on end now. He'll talk about how we've got to have a solution and we got to have bipartisanship and other such bilious crap. And then eventually the clock runs out. Second most powerful Democrat in the Senate, Senator Dick Durbin, said, "We are running out of time. We got to get this stuff done." And that's when I thought immediately about this tactic that we identified a long time ago here in West Virginia. Maybe y'all know about it elsewhere, too. And that tactic is called delay, delay, fail. Well, I was right on the verge of joining the Democratic majority and getting rid of the filibuster for purposes of this legislation. Oh, but the time ran out. Delay, delay, fail. Now, what's interesting, if you look at Joe's tweet, my statement on the January 6th commission, it was issued today at 9:44 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. It's been quoted 1,818 times. It's been liked 31,900 times. It's been retweeted 5,146 times. The most instructive is the quote tweets, because that's people adding their own thoughts to his. Does this mean Manchin is ready to kill the filibuster? Or is this just political posturing? My money's still on posturing. Thank you, Senator Manchin. Oh, there's an optimist. Hear, hear. On the other hand, someone calling themselves Lefty Warrior says, a pointless waste of time. Joe Manchin will do nothing. Dan Rather, the optimist, says, Senator Manchin does not seem amused. Another cynic says, you're going to help your pal Mitch McConnell, aren't you, Joe? Such an outstanding American. Another individual pleading with him to please do something. And it goes on in that vein. Well, I'm well versed in delay, delay, fail. So that's the way, if I were a betting woman, that I would bet. Flavio, with an observation, regarding the Biden bipartisanship January 6th commission, Rick Wilson in a tweet, they sent people to kill you. Get a grip. They brought the, I mean, we've all heard that phrase, get a rope. How many times did that pop up in old Hollywood Western? Get a rope. Probably popped up in the captions of the silent film, Birth of a Nation. Get a rope. Well, on January the 6th, no one had to say, get a rope, because they brought the rope. And on the grounds of the capital of our country, we the people, those of us still working toward that more perfect union, they brought their own,
It was BYOG on January 6th with the maggots. Bring your own gallows. They wanted to murder their own God Emperor's vice president. They wanted to murder Mike Pencilneck Geek. They wanted to murder Nancy Pelosi. They were trying to wipe out the line of succession. What is that line of succession, by the way? Well, it's the president, and then it's the vice president, and then it's the Speaker of the House, and then it is the president pro tempore of the Senate. And after that, check me, constitutional scholars. After that, after the president pro tem of the Senate, doesn't it bounce back to the Secretary of State? Gee, who was the Secretary of State on the 6th day of January, 2021? Why, that's right. It was Mike Pompeo. You know, he graduated first in his class at West Point. I haven't said that in a while. God, it's still funny. And, of course, Mike Pompeo, being a millennialist evangelical, would have loved nothing more than for Chuckles Grassley, Nancy Pelosi, Mike Pence, to have swung from that gallows so that he could step in and declare Donald J. Trump maximum mother of all dictators for life. And because he graduated first in his class at West Point, he had pals, even though he was Secretary of State, he had pals in place in the Pentagon. And this is why we must have the January 6th Commission. It is also why, even though I'm the only person talking about it, well, no, I'm not. Our community are the only people talking about it. It's why we need a special prosecutor whose brief is to follow the January 6th uprising anywhere and everywhere that it went, even if it lands in the lap of Mike Pompeo, who graduated first in his class at West Point. Well, we missed out on that for a while, but by golly, three times already. How about that? Did you ever think about that? Because it kind of just dawned on me today. I was thinking about, who was it? Who was it that said, I'm in control here? By the way, Lee in New York with a trenchant observation. Republicans do not care if guns are pointed at them. Representative Steve Scalise was shot. He still doesn't care that people came to the Capitol to hang Mike Pence. And he still supports more guns because it is the only route. What you have here in the form of the Republican Party are cornered rats. Okay? Cornered rats. Who have only what they perceive to be one avenue of escape, and that one avenue of escape, that one avenue toward continued existence, runs right through Donald Trump and right through the mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing freaks who care more about guns than their fellow American citizens. And that is why they behave as they behave. Their race is run. Their sun has set. The only way that they maintain any power at all is through gerrymandering,
through voter suppression, noxious voter ID laws, and the sleaze of the political machinations that arise out of Citizens United. That's it. I fondly and sincerely wish I was wrong. I don't think so. Oh, yeah, there we go. Thank you to Randy Radar, and thank you to Billable Rick, and thank you to Lee in New York. I'm in control here. Those were the words of Alexander Haig. Volunteered to be in charge, Lee points out. Billable Rick says, those were the words of General Alexander Haig after the attempted assassination of Ronald Reagan. Randy Radar says, you know, you would have had to get rid of Trump first. Well, but that's the whole point. Trump had lost an election. There's no provision in the Constitution, really, for a military takeover of the country. But if you could get a West Point grad in there who was in tight with a bunch of wackadoodle generals, How many signed off? You remember the story? What was it, a week ago? Where General Jack Niehoff signed on to a letter from a bunch of retired generals accusing Joe Biden of being a commie simp? We haven't the first foggy clue, well, we do, of how broad and deep runs the treasonous insurrectionist strain in this country. None. Mm-mm. Well, that's true. And thank you, Jeremy. Jeremy took care of the Battling Bella Abzug challenge. Thank you. And again as much. So that means that we are... we're at $345 to come up even with fundraising as we try to finish May to the good. Flavio with a question says, what I want to know, and the Democrats should want to know too, who in the House and the Senate gave reconnaissance tours for the insurrectionists? I want to know who chartered the buses, paid for the hotel rooms. I want to know everything. I think the Democrats do want to know that, Flavio. We find it too easy to, well, and you know, maybe with my transition, I've become a bit of a Pollyanna. I'm taking Democrats at their word when they say that they want answers. I don't think that this is an elaborate ruse to create a bullshit cover-up, because while I was skeptical. And yes, I did. I freely admit it. I made reference to the 9/11 Commission, and I made reference to the fact that George Bush was not put under oath, and he was agreed to testify if he could sit on five deferment Dick Cheney's lap and let Dick Cheney work his mouth for him. Well, that thing was dummied up from jump. Now, this commission, would it be able to do anything with with an equal number of Republicans and Democrats? Would at least one Republican cross the line to issue a subpoena? Would those subpoenas have any force and effect after the 5 years of Nitwit Nero's little pissants and cut purses and foot pads and minions, lick spittles, telling Congress to just go Cheney itself every time they talked about a subpoena? Those are questions to which we are still wanting answers as of now. But I'm willing, I am willing to think that it would be worth the effort to make the effort. It's already out of the House. The House has done its job. Nancy Pelosi has done her job again. And it sits awaiting the Senate. And now, pathetically, well, I mean, you know what I mean. It's gotten to the point where, at least according to CNN, Moscow Mitch McConnell is down to begging. CNN's Jamie Gangle said that within the last 24 hours, McConnell has doubled down, started reaching out to particular senators he was afraid might be wavering, and asked them to vote against the commission, quote, as a personal favor. What does that mean, as a personal favor? Does that mean I'll publish the dirty pictures I have of you having sexy time with a farm animal? Is that what that personal favor means? Or does that mean that maybe somewhere down the line there will be a numbered bank account in the Cayman Islands or in Switzerland, and you get the number, and Elaine will happily part with the cash? CNN's Gangle continued in talking with John King and said, our sources are suggesting that Mitch McConnell may really have been concerned that Mrs. Sicknick's visit today would sway some Republican senators, because Officer Brian Sicknick's widow went to the Senate of the United States today and went door to door to Republicans saying, please, 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 in the name of my dead husband, my children's dead father, please vote in favor of this commission. Nonetheless, Moscow Mitch took to the floor earlier today to try to wheedle and make some sort of pitiable case for why we don't need to know exactly what happened on that day and the days leading up and months and weeks, or weeks and months leading up to it.
Multiple Senate committees are conducting their own bipartisan inquiries. And obviously the role of the former president has already been litigated exhaustively.
No. The role of the former president is already... Can't even say his name, can you? Moscow Mitch. The former guy. It hasn't been litigated exhaustively.
Exhaustively in the high-profile impeachment trial we had right here in the Senate several months ago. I do not believe the additional extraneous commission...
Oh, it's extraneous now.
...that Democratic leaders want would uncover crucial new facts or promote healing.
You know, at least as long as we don't get to subpoena anybody that matters, as long as we don't look into the same people who write the checks to me who wrote the checks for the damned insurrection, there ain't nothing meaningful to be learned in all that.
Frankly, I do not believe it is even designed to do that. That's why the Speaker's first draft began with a laughably rigged and partisan starting point, and why the current language would still lock in significant unfairness under the hood. So I'll...
That's twice. That's twice now. Somebody needs to get to Moscow Mitch, even at the risk of being chomped at by his snapping turtle jaws, and say, Mitch, buddy, that photograph of you posing with Confederate wannabes in front of their filthy treasonous flag is all over the internet. More people have probably seen you in that photograph than any other photograph of you. Please, Mitch, if you want to make your case, stop talking about under the hood. Because you're just
reminding people that you wear one, Mitch. You fucking Grand Dragon, Grand Kleagle, Exalted Cyclops, Amphibian freak, you.
Continue to support the real, serious work of our criminal justice system in our own Senate committees. And I'll continue to urge my colleagues to oppose this extraneous layer when the time comes for the Senate to vote.
Yeah, well, shut the fuck up, Mitch, because the problem is criminal cases are not investigated in public view. Grand jury presentments are not made in public view. Evidence adduced before a grand jury is not made in public view because those are all secret. And so the bottom line on this commission becomes one of transparency. We need this commission because, frankly, America needs to tune in for days on end for what will be a civics lesson. And that's one of the things that scares Moscow Mitch to death, the fact that people may actually learn a little bit about how government functions or dysfunctions. Boy, says Darlene in Connecticut. What's Moscow Mitch afraid of? He knows something. He's hiding something. Of course he does. He's got enough members of his caucus who were up to their nasty little eyebrows in this, that if it gets bad, and it could very easily get bad, just as Joe Manchin pointed out, his party's prospects in 2022, when I remind us all, Mitch once again has to defend as many seats as he did in 2020. And that's not good. He's got an open seat in Alabama. He's got probably a viable challenger to little Marco Rubio in Florida. He's got an open seat. Doesn't he have an open seat in Kansas? Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, has to be reelected in his own commonwealth when he himself in 2020, Mitch McConnell, was only reelected by counties, curiously enough, voting by counties that curiously enough overwhelmingly voted for Joe Biden, deciding they wanted to keep old Mitch too. Curiouser and curiouser, said Alice. But again, Moscow Mitch plays the long game. And he probably feels fairly confident that he has the votes. But Jesus Christ, if shit hits the fan over Josh Hawley and Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, and Tommy the Tuber, and constitutional scholar Mike Lee, bad things could happen. Despite the fact that he was booed at his own party's convention in Utah, Bishop Willard wields a lot of power in Utah, and if constitutional scholar Mike Lee was to somehow go down politically, legally, then Moscow Mitch, well, his problems just get worse. Alabama's right next to Georgia. Hell, Stacey Abrams might be able to even jump on I-20 from Atlanta to Birmingham and be there in 2.5 hours. And Richard Shelby's open Senate seat could suddenly become at hazard, especially if the Lulu caucus of Roy Tolamore and Mo Brooks Les Brames decides to contest for it. Moscow Mitch in 2022 has to fight a multi-front war. And I don't care if it's von Clausewitz or Caesar writing on strategy, or, hey, how about Sun Tzu? When you have to divide your forces and fight a multi-front war, your entire structure is imperiled. And so all of that hangs in the balance of him making sure that this inquiry is not made. What if there are enough Republicans voting with the Democrats in the January 6th commission to drop a subpoena on Josh Hawley, to drop a subpoena on Mike Lee, on Tommy the Tuber, on Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America? What if we turn over a bunch of rocks and find a shit ton of Republicans scurrying around underneath? You want to find out? You want to find out, Flavio, who was giving the tours and the recon? This is how you find out who was giving the tours and the recon. They might already be talking about it in grand juries. I don't know. But grand juries move, for the most part, slowly and largely at the will of the prosecutor. And that's not how to find it out. And so it is that this is the nature of this is what the chessboard looks like right now. And Jesus, when you're playing white and Joe Manchin's your queen and Mitch McConnell's the other side, the black queen, it does not inspire confidence. God, I'd love to be wrong about Joe. I'd love for him to find his conscience and his confidence, and finally say enough. And then I would gladly fire up this microphone, and I would happily declare, as I did with the performance thus far of Joe Biden, I would declare gladly how wrong I was. I'm definitely open to that. How about you? On our side, are we afraid to eat our words? I saw John in Central PA sent me a tweet from earlier today. It's a fake Onion headline. Shows a young white kid in a hoodie. The Onion did not publish this, but it's good enough that it could be. Local Zoomer discovers that the politician they stand is a flawed and fallible human being, immediately loses all faith in democracy. That is very nearly perfect. Oh my God. And of course, that's just another way of talking about the sparkle fart propelled unicorn cavalry purity patrol that we have been talking about for, oh sweet Jesus, what, at least 5 and probably more like 10 years. The political infants who don't understand that old adage that politics is the art of the possible, who have yet to perhaps have enough life-lived experience to realize that another old saw that you mustn't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Sorry about the clacking. Someday I'm going to find a quiet keyboard. What I was checking on, I was checking to see if we had a green news report, but Brad reports that there has been an unexpected infrastructure upgrade in their building, or just outside of their recording studio. So, no green news report. By the way, thanks so very much to our dear friend Lila. Thank you, Lila, for jumping in. We're down to 325 now. 25 away from being fully funded for everything except today. Thank you, Lila. I've known Lila for a long, long time. She's a dear friend. Thank you. So we're left to wonder just what it is that constitutes a personal favor and what the payback is for Mitch McConnell. The Public Religion Research Institute has a bit of grim news out via a new polling data. And it's a reminder of just how little it takes to the tiniest hole in the biggest ship will eventually sink that ship. The bigger the hole, the faster the sinking. According to Public Religion Research Institute, somewhere between 15 and 20% of the American people. And when you drill down to find out how many that is in Republicans, it's almost a third of the Republican Party agree with the core, loopy, picking their teeth with their toenail clippings beliefs of QAnon. A third of Republicans were enough to give us Donald Trump. And that number for Republicans is right there with the same percentage of Americans who supported Nitwit Nero in early 2015. So all of those people who burble about how we need the Republican Party to come to its senses. We need a viable, sane Republican Party, with which I could not more vociferously disagree. We need a center party and a left party. The right party has had more than its fair share of the time. Well, that ain't going to happen. When a third of the Republican Party believes that there is a cannibal, pedophile, child kidnapping cult that operates out of the basement of a pizza parlor in Washington, D.C. that doesn't have a basement, and that Hillary Clinton runs around wearing the flayed face of an infant, and that they have a special cocktail they make of children's blood in search of the fountain of youth. Whatever it is that real Republican conservatism that keeps being pitched and ballyhooed and grunted and barked about by the Dick in a Wig Cheney, well, it's as out of fashion as high button greaves. It's gone. It ain't coming back. And there's no evidence that it's coming back. Our analysis of these phenomena has to be evidence-based. Here, let's go to, how about Virginia? Virginia. A public park. You remember when we had the story of Neo-Maxi Zoom Dweeby Fucker Carlson telling his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing viewers that they should go out and accost and assault parents who put masks on their children now without knowing why a parent might do that, without knowing if a child perhaps is immunocompromised, without respecting the rights of parents that the Fucker Carlsons of the world before the pandemic used to holler were of critical importance. Parents have to have the right to discipline their children any way that they need. You know, spare the two, it says there, right there in the good book, spare the 2x4 and spoil the child. You gotta beat them. You remember James Dobson out in Colorado Springs, who had some sort of Ed D degree, I think, from the University of Southern California, and authored books in which he told parents, good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christian parents, to beat their small children until they cried real tears. The same James Dobson who said, if you want to keep your little boy from turning into a homo, what you got to do is you got to get in the shower with him naked and you got to show him your junk. I'm not making this shit up. That stuff didn't go away. And the right wing was happy to say, oh, yeah, you know what? I'll tell you what. People got to be able to parent their children the way they need to parent them. You know, I got the shit beat out of me when I was little. And look, it didn't do me no harm. Well, that ship has sailed, too. Not really. But now, if you are an aggrieved person, an aggrieved maggot, an aggrieved anti-vaxxer, well, you do what this asshole did in Virginia. And you confront a parent who is trying to protect their children by having the children wear a mask, and the children are running around and playing in the playground and having a fine time. And you get this.
YouTube Me channel. Too, okay?
All right.
Me too.
I run a very popular YouTube channel.
Could you introduce yourself?
Yeah, he runs a very popular YouTube channel. But he won't give her his name.
Getting kids, child abuse, suffocation. You understand that most people are vaccinated right now, right?
Well, okay, dumbass, most people aren't. At best, we might be at 50% vaccination for adults in this country. And that 50% rate is not uniform, because it's like 28.9% in Alabama. God only knows what it is in Mizzoupistan. As of the program a few nights ago, all of eight states out of 50 had actually reached the 70% threshold for adult vaccinations. None of them were Virginia. and that certainly isn't counting children. Just eight states. So those eight states, and they are, you know, places like New Jersey, populous states, they're making up for the Alabamas, but and oh, by the way, in case you were wondering, this little fact. As of Wednesday, the 26th day of May, West Virginia is the least safe state in the Union relative to COVID-19. Yep. Well, I tell you what, them multimillionaires of the for-profit media sure did blow some smoke up. Make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice fundament. Now, in no way, shape, form, or fashion are we going to not let you get vaccinated. The only problem is, we are first in transmission rate in the United States. We are fourth in hospitalizations in the United States. And we are second in the positive testing rate in the United States. And just like our sister state, actually our mother state, Virginia, we are not one of those eight states that has reached 70%. Oh no, far from it. The lowest transmission rate in the United States is in Maine. Maine also is one of those eight states where at least 70% of the adult population has been vaccinated. So no, you dipshit in Virginia. Most of this country is not vaccinated. Not that vaccinations probably even matter to this asshole. He just wants to go out and harass people who are trying to protect their children. Gee, if mommy and daddy send their babies off to school, if they're, you know, when schools are open. If mommy and daddy send their babies off to school when schools are open with one of those, and it's worth thinking about, one of those Kevlar backpacks, so the children can maybe hide behind the backpack and hope not to be chopped into automatic weapons fire chutney when some lawful gun owner burns his house down and decides to go and blow away school children. I wonder if this dickhead with the really popular YouTube channel would criticize that too. Well, you're just trying to protect, you know, you're just trying to keep your children from experience the full American experience. That's what you're doing. You and I both know how this dumb bastard votes. Right? Questions? Anybody? Bueller? I mean, is this some wild-eyed progressive? And you've even got people like Joe Scarborough now who goes on a little mask rant from time to time. If you're out in the outdoors, take your mask off. Take it off. Shut up. I thought this was Merca, where people could make their own decisions. I had occasion to be in Wally World earlier this afternoon. It's almost unavoidable. I try not to, but sometimes. There's a flavor of yogurt that I can't. That, you know, I begged, I pleaded, but no. Kroger won't carry it. Only Wally World. It's the Oikos banana cream yogurt. It's one of the last of my guilty pleasures. So I had to go to Wally World. Because the precious little three-year-old has decided she likes it, too. Did they have any? They had one. But anyway, I'm on my way out of Wally World. And this woman with an accent not from around here. It kind of sounded like this. It's tourist season. Was walking past me. And there was a nice moment. It wasn't like Tuesday. Them spike babes. I got mammed. I was walking out of there with my mask, and I still had my mask on. It's really cute. It's kind of a fuchsia color. And she's walking past me. She says, "Ma'am, you got to wear a mask in there." Think quick, rabbit. And I said, "If you don't want to die from the damn disease, you do." Kept moving. Only I was trying to do my girly voice. And she... and went on past. Now, I don't know why I think the things I do, but, well, I do know, because I was raised with this stuff. If you read the stories of the Exodus, you know, the children of Israel get off in... No, they don't get off. Stop that. The children of Israel get, you know, deep into Sinai, and I'm not sure if it's before or after they fuck themselves, you know, with the golden calf and all of that. And things get a little bit rough, and they start barking and barking and hooting and grunting at Moses, saying, "Yeah, thanks, Moses. You know, at least under Pharaoh, we were working our asses off, but we had three hots and a cot. Now we're out here in the goddamn desert. We're eating that stuff that falls on the ground in the morning. Do you know how boring that shit gets? You got us walking or wandering around behind a pillar of fire. We never should have left, Moses." And there's a vibe of that with this. We want to take our masks off. We never should have put our masks on in the first place. And this state has the highest transmission rate in the union. Jesus. I wonder why. I wonder if it might have anything to do with all them out-of-state plates. Our businesses definitely, desperately need the business. No doubt about it. But you got to wonder how many people are bringing little Mr. COVID with them. Well, we're going to be outside anyway. We don't have to worry about it. Joe Scarborough didn't tell me. But anyway, back to the asshole in Virginia. Mama tried to call the cops. Mama did call the cops. They showed up too late. The children were smart. They stayed as far away from this sick pervert as possible. But while he was screaming, "Suffocating, suffocating," you know what the children are doing? Running and playing and not suffocating.
Suffocation. You understand that most people are vaccinated right now, right? Why are these kids in masks outside? You understand that how harmful that is to their mental welfare? You understand
Could
that
you leave me
how
alone?
Harmful that is
you
to their mental
You are stressing my baby.
You understand
Do you know how stressful...
And on and on and on. But when she finally, doop, boop, boop, you know, 911 sounds like a thing when you've got the key. Beep, boop, boop. Suddenly he was done lecturing about the mental harm of wearing a mask. You know what's really bad for the mental health of a child? Dying from COVID! But that's the face of the modern American Republican Party. Just like Marjorie Trader Gangrene Cuball is the face of the modern American Republican Party. It ain't Dick in a Wig Cheney, who voted with Nitwit Nero 93% of the time. They've been awful all this time. And I hate this revisionist horseshit that somehow says they weren't. 9 states now, thank you, serving as a member of the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department. Lee in New York points out New Mexico has become the 9th state to reach 70%. And remember, Joe Biden's goal is the whole country being 70% by Independence Day. It has a lovely sort of symmetry to it, doesn't it? Independence Day. But somehow, Goober hears freedom is violated if mothers try to protect their children. Damn. Lee in New York pointing out, and you know, Lee being a member of the tribe would know, says, Moses was asked, why do we still have to wear a mask? Isn't that stone carving done yet? Moses got the complaints after getting to Mount Sinai in the golden calf. Yeah, because he came down off the hill with his stone tablets, and the stuff that was written on them wasn't nearly as much fun as the party they were having while he was gone. Moses was not a popular party guest. Kind of a grim dude. Meanwhile, from Jeremy in Vermont, Robin, stop telling us how the children of Israel got off by fucking themselves with a golden calf. Okay, just a little. That's a very tiny cowbell. Slightly larger cowbell for Lee in New York. It's kind of weird, Darlene. I kind of have to be in that zone where I'm trying to use the voice or pitch my voice upward. Because Darlene says, your girly voice? LOL, let's hear how you replied to the mask Nazi. Well, if you don't want to die, you do. I got a long way to go. I do. Randy and PA pointing out, all the Israeli former slaves had to do was follow the sun, like in the Beatles song, and then they wouldn't have been lost for 40 years. Yeah, but that was back at a time when, you know, people were baffled by wheelbarrows and didn't understand why it rained and thought that snakes talked and shit like that. COVID? Well, news from up over down under. Robert in Australia says Melbourne is in lockdown again. Did I mention that Melbourne's in lockdown again? Not just Melbourne, but all of Victoria, the state of. Victoria has plunged into a 7-day snap lockdown as rapidly growing COVID-19 clusters climbed to 26 cases today. Robert pointing out, and we're vaccinating as well. Keep those masks on. Yeah, there's that meme of that disgusted-looking eagle, you know, with the beak kind of like, and you know, kind of stomping somewhere. That's me every time I forget my mask and turn around and go back to the car. Not pull president. Kind of stupid. Yeah. So I still got my mask. and I still swap them out. And I still change my little KN95 filters inside of them. And frankly, I have very little... And isn't it interesting that this big, tough, macho dude who has a very popular YouTube channel, isn't it interesting that he accosts a woman about her children and thinks and feels like he's so privileged that he can instruct her, who has managed thus far to successfully raise said children, about what she's doing wrong? I wonder if he'll have the nerve to try it again now that he's gotten some publicity negative. Over this, and maybe people are on the watch out for him. I also still wonder about the dude in the Maserati who shot a woman with two kids in the car in the shoulder and then shot at the witness behind him. I wonder if he's been caught. I looked earlier, didn't see anything. Oh, by the way, down in the land of the free and the home of the brave, you know, Texas, Fort Worth, a place near and dear to several members of the Horn Family Community Congregation, near and dear to our pal Joy in Ann Arbor. A report from media there. An hours-long police standoff that left three officers injured in Flower Mound ended at 5:32 a.m. this morning, Thursday, the 27th day of May, 2021. As FBI SWAT officers took a suspect into custody, according to a news release. Police said 60-year-old Brian Huckabee, no, really? All he's missing is the K. He's an H-U-C-A-B-E-E, not an H-U-C-K-A-B-E-E. 60-year-old Brian Huckabee was reported to 9/11 as suicidal before he shot the three SWAT-trained officers Wednesday night when they were attempting to enter the home for a welfare check. The incident occurred in the 2900 block of Termain Drive in Flower Mound, Texas. Flower Mound Police Chief Andy Cancel said in a cancel culture. No, he's a K-A-N-C-E-L, cancel. Said in a news conference this morning that all three officers who were shot were released from the hospital. One was shot in the chest, but his body armor saved his life. Another bullet hit another officer's ballistic shield and shattered the glass. And the third one got hit by bullet fragments in his neck, face, and shoulders. And here's that, you know, here's the telling part. Mr. Huckabee is, despite the fact that he was reportedly suicidal, is still alive. Because when the FBI SWAT team showed up, after police had put drones in the air to watch everything, tried to send a robot unit into the house, because they didn't know if they'd shot him or not. But he walked out of the house with his hand, and he didn't set fire to it. Walked out of the house with his hands in the air and surrendered without incident. And curiously, what was that phrase you used, Megan? Red flag interpretive dance. Yeah, the same house had a call in 2017, and the residents there at that time turned over their guns, and as the Fort Worth Star-Telegram article reports, A detective spent months trying to direct them to resources to help them with whatever problems they were having. And the police are not releasing any information as to whether he's going to be charged with anything. But if the charges are filed, the police will let us know. Chief Cancel said, the officers responded with patience and professionalism and took care of each other in this situation and did not tase him five times and did not kick him on the ground and they did not shackle him and then beat him until he died. I don't know for sure about 60-year-old Brian Huckabee, but I'm making an educated guess that unlike Mr. Ronald Green in Louisiana, Mr. Huckabee wasn't like Mr. Ronald Green in Louisiana, if you know what I say. I was trying real hard to do my received pronunciation of M-E-L-B-O-U-R-N-E, Australia. And I have been educated. Melbourne. Locally, we say, Robert says, locally we say Melbourne or Melbourne, depending on what part of Oz you come from. See, John Fox tried to tell me how to say that one night. I kept Mebbin, Mebbin, Mebbin. But it's Melbourne. But there's a reason. It's just like C-A-N-B-E-R-R-A is pronounced Canberra. I know about Canberra. But this is the best part. This is the cowbell part. Robert says, you got to say it fast so the flies don't get in. Oh, God, that's so good. So we were at 325, and now, thanks to our dear sister Jude and Women Standing, we are down to 300. Thank you. And Jude had pointed out earlier, Women Standing's current focus in Tacoma, Washington. Three Tacoma officers involved in Manuel Ellis's death charged with second-degree murder and manslaughter. This is the first time the Attorney General's office has criminally charged police officers for the unlawful use of deadly force. And it's one of those things that was so horrifying, you wonder, A, what took so long and how did this not happen sooner? Or how does this not happen at all? It's unavoidable. In Tacoma, Washington, March 3rd, 2020, Manuel Ellis died in police custody, which is different from saying was allegedly killed by police, which is what happened, again with the weasel language. An autopsy by the Pierce County Medical Examiner concluded the death a homicide, but found drugs and a heart condition also contributed to Ellis's death, because it always contributes to a black guy's death. Two peace officers, Christopher Burbank and Matthew Collins, are charged with second-degree murder. A third, Timothy Rankin, was charged with first-degree manslaughter. Six officers were involved in the slaying. Reached for comment, the Tacoma Cop Union said, "We look forward to a trial!" As they were restraining him, Mr. Ellis told the cops that he couldn't breathe. And oddly, this actually happened before the cop lynching of George Floyd. And it turned out that the cops couldn't get their stories straight. They claimed that Mr. Ellis was manhandling them, throwing one of the cops into the street like a child, you know, because of the phenomenal, massive personal strength of blackness. But there's video. Video shows Collins holding Ellis in a chokehold from behind while Burbank tasers him. Ellis isn't resisting. He's holding his hands up and attempting to capitulate. Upstanding Officer Burbank said, well, I didn't hear him say he couldn't breathe. That also is, the lie is also put to that by the video. The Pierce County Sheriff's Office tried to dummy that up, the original investigation. But then it turned out that, there was a Pierce County Sheriff's deputy who was actually on the scene while they were busy killing Mr. Ellis. Because that's how this shit works. And so the Washington State Patrol took over the investigation. City of Tacoma's been sued by Ellis's family. And, there have been vigils. The family's attorney, James Bible, said he'd participated in his church band as a drummer. He'd spent time talking to his family on the phone. He'd spent time with several other people during that day just prior to this event. And nobody indicated there was any problem with Manny Ellis. Nobody indicated he was being aggressive or demonstrating any sort of bizarre behavior or anything to that effect. And so it has taken a little over a year to get charges. All because some cops rioted and likely murdered an innocent man. Yeah. I know. Oh, and we're a little, at this point in time, this is a 1 hour and 47 minute filibuster. But now it's not going to be, because someone, I think, is still, I hope, yep, still on the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, surprise.
Oh, Jude, how are you, dear?
Well, I'm doing pretty well. I mean, it seems like when I feel like I have to call in, you always have so many subject matters, and I have to adjust myself to, you know, move through all of them because they're all heavy. But I wanted to.
Well, that, you know, to a certain extent, Jude, that's a function of the mess that my mind is, because it's weird. I can see all these stories, and I can see how they loop back on each other and how they all fold in on each other. But I guess it's not necessarily obvious to everybody. I see links where, well, maybe links aren't.
But I think the word, when you used enfolding, that's exactly what it is. It's like a journey, even if nobody calls in and you do your filibustering or however you say that, there's always this thread that continues to, you know, hold the community together. And I know it's a lot of work. Imagine it's a lot of work to do, but the reason I called in is I thought it would be interesting. I just got home from work a little bit ago, and then I always turn you on right away. How, when you say, you know, do that last bit of litany and say goodnight to all of us and give out the gratitude for the people that are, you know, that are part of what's going on, and you turn everything off in the studio, what do you do, Robin? What can you give me? Can you just walk through a little bit?
Yeah. The first thing I do after I've stopped the recording and stopped the sending and stopped the listening on the streaming interfaces is I yell through the wall to Agnes, and I repeat a line from Mark Twain's Diary of Adam and Eve. In Mark Twain's Diary of Adam and Eve, he describes what happens on Monday, what happens on Tuesday, and it goes on. And every time he gets to Sunday, it's just two words, three, Sunday, pulled through. And in the way Twain uses it, it's hilarious. Because, you know,
say that again.
when he gets to Sunday, Mark Twain writes in the Diary of Adam and Eve, Sunday, pulled through. In other words, Sunday, you know, just pulled through. And so.
Oh, pulled. I thought it was pulled through. Oh.
Yeah, P-U-L-L-E-D.
Well,
yeah, P-U-L-L-E-D-T-H-R-O-U-G-H. Pulled through.
G-H.
And so when I shut everything down, everything shut down. The first thing I do is I yell through the wall, pulled through. Because
I love it.
Mark Twain is my hero. Mark Twain is my patron, one of my patron saints.
Mm. Well, you were the one that reintroduced me to Twain. And that's, you know, when I started listening to you like 15 years ago, and I had forgotten, you know, so much of the good literature. And that's one of the fascinating things. You have such a wonderful well to pull from, you know, that have so many different aspects of it. But the literature is one that's always, just like the quote at the end of your emails.
Oh, that, yeah, from my, you know, Twain was Vonnegut's hero, and Twain and Vonnegut are both my heroes. And I remember the first time I ever saw that quote, and it has stayed with me to this day, because I think it is so essentially profound. A normal person functioning well on the upper levels of a prosperous industrialized society can hardly hear his conscience at all.
Amen.
And that means we have to work to hear it, Jude.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be still and listen to it. Because it's never going to get over the din and cacophony of everyday life.
Well, it comes down to which we've talked about many times, really being in the reality of the moment at hand. You know, just you and I talking right now. And I have to tell you something really wonderful. This is the first time ever that I've been on the phone with you, Robin, that I feel like I'm talking with you, that I'm talking just with you. And I am, like, so comfortable.
That's wonderful.
It could get scary. No.
Well, I was going to tell you something that I thought remarkable as well. I've had, you know, I do get questions about the little rituals of the program and the things I say, and every now and then somebody who's new to the program will ask me what always, 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 Gina, it's all for you means, and I'm always happy to oblige. But no one has ever asked me what it's
How
like.
How come you don't mention
what it's, what it's, no, no one has ever asked me what it's like the minute the light goes off. Because that's kind of, that kind of threw me for a second, because that's, well, and I should not be surprised that it would come from you, Jude. That's a profound question.
I wanted to know.
Because
you know, we have this.
Well, what I was going to say is, there is, and this is not me praising myself, but there is a whole lot of energy that has to be tapped and has to be available for these 3 hours. Or else it will be, and maybe sometimes it is, dull as dishwater. I've got to have that, I'm not comfortable with the word, but that performance energy.
Yes.
And just like the wick of a candle blown out will remain hot, so too it takes a little while for that energy to dissipate. There's no way that I can just shut everything down and then go in and climb into bed and go to sleep. It's impossible. It's impossible. So lately, you probably heard them. You may have heard the boy, the cat's name is Kyle, yowling at the door because he wants in. And so after I shut everything down lately, I step out onto the stoop, and he's become very friendly, and he leaps up onto my lap and nuzzles my neck. and he's gray, and he's got almost the fur of a Persian, and this bottle brush tail that he carries straight up like a flagpole, and he leaps up into my lap, puts his head against my neck, and begins to purr crazily, madly, and so I just sit there and pet him, and I feel a whole lot better when I do that, because I found out that one of the things that petting our fur babies does is it's a serotonin release. There's a biochemical relationship between us and the animals that love us and that we get to love. But nobody's really ever asked that question, and it's fascinating to me. Thank you.
Oh, it's just an extension. It's like the first time we met each other was in D.C., and I think it was my second trip there. And Mike was there, and Daniel Ellsberg. I got to meet his wife. You know, I mean, it was just.
I'm pretty sure Ferg was with me. Maybe not.
No, I don't think so. Because we went out to dinner. Tara Devlin and you.
Yes. That was that trip. That was the trip where Tara and I operated the getaway car for Mike.
The real curious thing about that, I had taken two of my grandkids and then my daughter, and we went, and it was just there's kind of a, it's not a harmonizing, but there's a frequency that goes on, and you probably experience that when you're doing things that you know that you're really supposed to do. It's like you're in, like, just such a total alignment, and we were, Mike was up on the fence, and everyone had, you know, gathered, and they were going, and he waved hello and such. And I was standing, you know, they have that sidewalk. They have a fence, and, well, God only knows what it looks like now. And then that huge sidewalk in the street. Well, I was doing a peace stand kind of in the direction where Mike and quite a few of the others, you know, were standing. And when I went into the intention, Shanice, one of my granddaughters, was next to me. Well, I don't know how long it went on. And she goes, Nana. I said, yeah. And she goes, my mom just called because she was back in Lafayette Park. And she said, she just wanted you to know that they put barricades up. So, I opened up my eyes and sure enough, within that period of time, they had surrounded that, you know, the whole street. And they had that, remember they had that, had a white top with those poles where the officers were. Do you remember that?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Oh. Yeah. So I said, and at that moment, I probably, if I was alone, would have just stood there. But, you know, Shanice was 16, and I was not quite prepared for, you know, you have to be responsible. So we work our way around. There's no one in that enclosure, and everybody up on the fence, all of them, and it's like five rows out and chanting whatever they were chanting. I walk over with her, and they had closed that access. One of the access ops, and there was a police officer there. And I said, gosh, I said, would it be possible that we could, you know, leave right now? And he said, that's absolutely, ma'am, absolutely. And he opened it up. And that's when things changed, you know, and they started coming in, which I thought was a very, very gracious gift of the universe that I didn't, didn't do anything to damage anyone around me, you know, especially my granddaughter, because she wouldn't have known. And it's like the essence of women standing is there is such a wide, wide umbrella of protection that at times, Robin, it's almost too much. It's like almost too much to house in its awareness of its vastness. It's like coming to, you must have moments when you're in the midst of, when you have a real serious issue before you and you're looking at it and there's like so many different roads or dimensions open up in terms of possibilities. I come back and be within myself and wait until I have an internal sense of what I'm supposed to do. And at those moments, it's pondering whether or not self-will is involved in it, or if it's an actual movement into something that's going to, you know, raise the energy level and such. And you know, those times of conflict. How do you deal with your times of conflict?
Some of this is harder to answer than others, Jude, because I am at a point in my life where everything is changing, and I can tell you this much. I was repeatedly taught through the course of my life that nothing is ever gained by panic. Excuse me, just one sec. Pollen, we have it. I didn't want to blow your eardrums out with that sneeze.
That's okay.
But the watchword has always been, remain calm, don't panic. Mm-hmm. And in those instances, I try to do exactly that. And I try to be mindful of where I let my emotions carry me, both in everyday life and in this long running conversation. Because it would be very easy to just open the microphone and start screaming and scream myself hoarse for 3 hours. Because there is no dearth of material that is worthy of it. But I have to try to guard that energy, because at that point, you know, in the short run there may be something somewhat cleansing in letting it go like that, but in the long run it becomes toxic. And
well,
some of this has to do with teaching I received literally at my mother's knee. My grandmother early on taught me that Kipling poem, If. And Kipling was a vicious racist and supporter of empire, but he learned over the years. And there remain some truths in that poem, even if it's gendered all to hell. And all the advice that he gave his son came to nothing, because his son was blown away in a stupid war, the First World War. So there's that. And then there's training that I received in terms of just public presentation. You can't just scream, because you lose any ability to convey meaning, no matter how cleansing it may feel. And then, of course, those 3 years that I've talked about, where those three law school years where they open up your skull and they take out your brain and they chop it into little tiny pieces and they mix it all together with a bunch of legalistic jargon and notions that dehumanize people, and then they pour it back in. That's part of it too, because you may be dealing with things in court that make you want to scream, but screaming will get you, you know, all that's going to get you is a contempt citation that you can't afford. And so you have to learn to convey and convince in an entirely different manner.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, thank you for that. There were all sorts of buttons were popping up, but I kept them down because I wanted to continue to listen to you, to your volition and what you're talking. When you look at yourself in the mirror, mm-hmm. Do you ever talk to yourself? Do you ever voice something to yourself?
Well, I talk to myself all the time. Not necessarily in the mirror.
But I just... Because of the woman it's like I don't have concepts about certain things, because I live so strongly with inside of myself, mm-hmm. that I just, observing people and, we've had a lot of good years in terms of our friendship.
Certainly.
You know, through a whole bunch of different, you know, and with Annette and such. And there's something about looking in a mirror and talking to oneself, not from an ego. I mean, I rarely look in there because I'm just, you know, I'm getting older and everything. But I'm this wonderful. I have embraced my Irishness, my ability to, you know, look at the, there is so much greenery around me right now that something has come alive because of being on the dark side of my soul for probably about 7 weeks. So connecting with you is, I ended up calling Kevin yesterday. We hadn't talked for a while. And then today.
Oh, wonderful. I know he was thrilled to hear from you.
Yeah. Well, Kevin is an interesting soul.
Oh, yes.
No, being blind. Yeah, he just, and he always answers the phone, it's just kind of monotone. And we'll engage back and forth. And every so often I say, are you sure this is okay that you're, you know, comfortable? And this isn't, yeah, I'm fine. But he is an absolutely clean soul. He helped me a couple of weeks ago with a situation at work and, you know, I wanted to go back, when you were talking about the serotonin, you know, and petting your, you know, animals and that fur and that whole tactile experience, you know, which sends, you know, I mean, synaptic cliffs and all sorts of such. When you mentioned about that serotonin, I had recently done some research about happiness. And why would anyone in such a, you know, fragmented world want to focus on happiness when, you know, people are dying? I mean, look at India. I mean, everywhere we go. I mean, look at the Ellis family here in Tacoma. I mean, just a myriad of things. I found out, and I had forgotten, you know, at my junior college level, about dopamine and how important.
Yes.
And what that neurotransmitter means to us. It puts us in a place of pleasure, which often pleasure, particularly for dominionists, would be something sexual and ugly. But that beautiful stage of just being in harmony. And that's what's kind of captured me. And I thought, oh my gosh, that has been a combination of my relationships with friends, you know, the work, the movement of women standing, the openness and honesty to call you and discuss with you, you know, what do you do when the microphone goes off? All those things are so important, and they're such connecting links, you know, like a fine fabric that connects people and, you know, on a very, very good level, I think. So there.
I think you're absolutely right, and I should be a little bit more forthcoming, because when the microphone goes off, it doesn't mean I'm done, because there is still about, oh, another half hour's worth of work in terms of getting the podcast loaded. So I take a couple of minutes and then I set about the business of getting the program uploaded. And so that, you know, that'll take me to about, oh, you know, 8:30 or so. But you're absolutely right. Dopamine, serotonin, endorphins.
Mm-hmm.
I've been,
oh, I know.
Since I started this, and I'm fits and starts, I'm not nearly as good about it as I should be. But since I started this exercise regime, I've noticed that when I get up and I go to the gym in the morning, in the immediate aftermath of it, I will be a wringing, wet, sloppy, hot, exhausted mess. But within about a half an hour, I feel like I've had a cold shower and I've got energy for the rest of the day. That's endorphins. That's just endorphins.
Okay, well, let me stop you. And let me stop you there. Why not? Let me offer you this. Why not, when you're having all that sweat and heat and everything, why not view that as a sweat lodge experience, you know, be connected with
Earth? Oh, it is. It's absolutely cleansing. And yeah. I do think about that. I mean, it's, you know, unlike Sweat Lodge, which I've done and which I love,
You know, sweat lodge is largely no better peaceful. What I'm doing is anything but peaceful. It's vigorous. It's active. But I'm, you know, but I'm also very much focused on my breathing. And that does that, you know, that does bring about a certain degree of calm. You know, in anything that we can do where we can lose ourselves a little bit, literally lose ourselves. When my days are, you know, I don't think I've been interviewed like this before. When the day, and then we've had them, when the days have absolutely gone to shit, and I know that, the one thing I don't do is say, screw it, and not go on air. Because that would violate the promise that I made to myself in this community. The fact that I can come in here is also cleansing in its own right, because I can shut everything out. And the only thing I have to do is this. And it is the only obligation that I owe. It is the only duty that I have. And so being able to focus like that will drain away. And you know, it may be waiting for me when the mic goes off. But in those 3 hours, this is all that exists. And I'm jealous of it. I'm absolutely jealous of it. Because...
Well, just about devour the moment at hand. You know, breathe it in, suck it in.
Right. I mean, I don't know if you know the story, and it may be apocryphal. He may have been lying. But there's this story of Samuel Taylor Coleridge. And, you know, all these stories, they all inform me. But Samuel Taylor Coleridge, of course, had a horrible laudanum addiction. Because in his day and age, it was not... That era was an era of drunks and drug addicts. We don't talk about it like that.
I have to stop you. What?
Yeah. What?
But what was the addiction? What I missed that for
laudanum. Sure. Laudanum. It is it's opium suspended in alcohol.
Oh, no, I've never heard of that. No.
Oh, the Lewis and Clark expedition. They may have taken gallons of laudanum with them. But those people of that era, especially men, would drink a gallon and a half to 2 gallons of wine a day, and then, you know, along the way they'd knock back a pint of laudanum. And so Coleridge had a laudanum problem. And opium being opium, he would have opium dreams. And he tells this story of how he had visualized, and I forget how many hundreds of lines of perfect poetry in an opium dream, and it was a dream of it was a vision of a poem about a paradise, and it's described in the literature to this day as a fragment. It is Xanadu, because he had been reading about Kublai Khan.
Xanadu, yes.
In Xanadu did Kublai Khan a stately pleasure dome decree, where Alf the sacred river ran through caverns measureless to man down to a sunlit sea. And there's just a few lines of that, but he says that he had all these lines of it, and because he was a poet, and poets don't make any money, he's scribbling for all he's worth, and a human being who has come down to us through the ages as the person from Porlock, a place in England, comes pestering him and pecking on his door about his tailor's bill being overdue. And that is what Coleridge blamed or used as an excuse for the fact that his poem is only, you know, 10 or 20 lines, however many lines long it is, instead of the hundreds that he had envisioned. Now, maybe that's just addict talk. But in the language, in the metaphor with which we deal with so much of this, to be beset by a person from Porlock is to be diverted from being focused on your artistic task at hand.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I share one every now and then on Facebook or whatever. I write a good bit of poetry. but it is all relatively short because, well, A, I was trained in some of that, but B, I want to try to finish the thought before the person from Porlock shows up. Because that would drive me bananas. Just as it, you know, when I have to stop, when I have to stop the program to, when I have to stop the program to take a phone call that I have to take, anything that breaks my train of thought.
Oh.
It's like a wound. It's like the rest of the program suffers from that interruption. You know, maybe I can get it back. Maybe I can pull it together. But it's a dice roll.
And maybe it wasn't the time for it to be expressed.
That, I have a harder problem with that. If I set out to do something, I'm kind of laser beamy about it.
Well, I can loan you some of mine, my free spirit. I'll loan you some of mine.
I will take all of it I can get. And, you know, you were asking me a minute ago about do I talk to myself?
Yeah, in the mirror. No, I'm talking about in the mirror.
In the mirror, I know. And not so much, but I promise this is not narcissism. I was never prone to look in the mirror a lot in my previous life because there was a lot of pain involved with that. I can take a few minutes in the mirror now because I can look for her. And more now, I can see her. And it makes me very happy. I published.
Forgive me, Robin. I don't mean to interject, but every so often I just have to. That's the harmony and the beauty that I see of the deeper voice that when we talk, and yet the photos that I've only seen one.
I'll have to make it so you can see others. I mean.
Because I'm not Facebook. I don't have, but I just embrace you. I just embrace you for the wonderful human being that you are, you know, that has brought.
But you have brought
so much joy.
Well, thank you.
Sorry.
No, it's quite
so
all right.
So much joy into my life. And, you know, if it would be absolutely lovely if Todd was listening and would call in or any of the other, you know, communities there. I remember when Jeremy, I think it was Jeremy from somewhere, when I had mentioned about that new position I had cleaning. There's so many wonderful.
Oh, Jeremy! Yeah, Jeremy said, "Welcome to the family."
Yeah, welcome to the cleaning field. Welcome to the cleaning field. But anyway, I didn't mean to.
Oh no! I just wanted to sort of, I don't know, bring some roundness to all of this, because I didn't there aren't a lot of photos of me smiling, and now every photo of me is smiling.
Oh.
But as to who I talk to, I don't talk to myself in the mirror. I talk to myself when I'm unhappy with myself, when I'm frustrated with myself, when I feel like I've screwed up or done something wrong. But I'll tell you who I do talk to. I talk to birds, I talk to bees, I talk to cats, dogs, ants, trees, flowers, and mostly when I'm doing that, it's a matter of thanking them and telling them what a fantastic job they're doing and how I appreciate what, I mean, okay, it's probably best my therapist and psychiatrist don't hear this. So we'll just pretend it's just us talking.
Hey, my lips are sealed, Robin. My lips are sealed.
I mean, I wrote a poem about it, in fact, several years ago. I've been watching this branch grow in a tree on my property line. And I can sit on my back stoop right outside the studio, and that tree for years, especially in the right light, looked like the silhouette of a horse. I wrote a poem about her, and I knew immediately that she was a she. She's a she in the poem. And I've watched her grow and change over the years. And I take a simple and profound joy in her.
And she's remained the same visual concept, right?
No, she's evolving. She's evolving some. She's changing.
Okay.
But that my stoop also looks off to a gap in the hills, directly to the west, where I get sunsets that Bob Ross couldn't paint. I get sunrises when I'm up for them that are of the sky getting painted before the sun is even up. That would take your breath away. It's nothing like the drama of the landscapes and seascapes of the Great Northwest. But for me, it's enough. And see, there's the boy.
Oh, I hear. Yes, I love it. That yeah, wants to be part of the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Wants to be in here. But I can't trust him in here because he would probably hang up on people or turn off the stream. You know, not intentionally, just because he's very much desirous of attention, and it's hard to give a cat all the attention that he wants. When you have to have your hands free for other things, like, you know, bringing calls on or making sure that the stream is still going or changing tabs. And he's really unforgiving in that regard.
Well, because he's on a mission, you know. He just wants to get up and cuddle next to your neck and probably just soothe you, you know.
And you sent some lovely photographs, and they're just, they're so... Yeah, that. Oh, my God. Is that a sunrise or a sunset? That's a sunset, isn't it?
That is. No, that's a sunrise, Robin. Ooh. That's a sun. That morning was a quintessential shift in my life, which I can't share anything about.
I understand.
I went out, and it covered over my head that crimson, red, and lavender with Mount Rainier. And people started pulling off the side of the road, and we talked. It was a moment of majesty. So.
Oh, yes, obvious. I wanted to share with you a note from Megan when I was talking about the person from Porlock. Megan said, Robin, you're being far too nice. When I'm in the middle of a good book or writing something and someone interrupts me, I have to remind myself that murder's illegal. And Jeremy just wrote in, and Jeremy said, I heard my name, you name droppers. You're welcome, Jude. It was wholeheartedly meant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think of you, Jeremy, when I'm doing all sorts of, when I went in on Monday, I was gifted with four different gifts in my housekeeping closet, and all of them were stones, just different things.
Oh, lovely. You know, I still have the stone that you gave me, and I carry it. I've got a Patagonia backpack that is my go bag, and it's got a change of clothes in it, a book, a couple little technical supplies, and at the bottom of that bag is that stone. And every time, it travels with me everywhere I go.
Gosh, if you take a photo of that, because, you know, I've given all of my, pretty much all my treasures away, because that's where they were supposed to go. I'd love to see that, to see if I remember. I gave to a wonderful, there's so many people there. There's a young man by the name of Sam. And you can't see anybody because, you know, they wear hoodies and they're working in the warehouse. But there's something about him. And one day he was in one of the eating areas, and he said, Jude, and he puts his hands together, you know, like makes an X like above his face. And he goes, here, let's do this. And so I went and did that. And one of the other wonderful, old, lovely older gentlemen that I work with, he says, gosh, Jude, I don't know if I should do that. And we laughed. Well, they found out it was DMX, and that was his, you know, his, I guess his iconic self.
Okay, yeah.
So when I went home that night, I looked at DMX, and, you know, his name is Earl Simmons, and I went, you know, reviewed his life. Painful journey. Mm-hmm. And then I watched quite a few of his videos, and I could see where he'd do, you know, would be, I could see where Sam would have a connection, and here we are. Today, I brought him in a piece of, and I don't, it wasn't Zion, and I have to ask my son. I had this beautiful, it looks like an edifice. I mean, it's part of a, you know, when they talk about fractals, you know, you mm-hmm. can find, it's a fractal of something majestic, and it's got a golden, brownish hue to it almost like crystals that shine. It's a beautiful piece. It's about 6-7 inches tall, and he opens it and he goes, "Well, Jude, I can't." And he's always joking, you know. He'll say things like he thinks he can trip me up. He says, "I think today." He says, "Can you say this? I think today is a fucking day." I said, "You want me to say it?" I said, "Sure." I said, "I think today is a fucking day." I said, "I don't think that. I'm just saying." But I love how he can be how he is, and that we can have this wonderful dance.
Sure.
And
you know, I just thought of something, and all these little connections that you open the doors to. I need to photograph the rock for you, but I also need to take a picture of it and send it to my sister Terry, because she is a professional geologist.
Oh.
And you know, and she's the one who helped me come out. And I need to get the stone's pedigree.
She posts
pictures of rocks on her Facebook page from time to time, and gives the explanation of what it is, where it's found, and quite often how old it is. And it's that how old it is part, and how it came into existence, that makes me just sit there with my little mouth hanging open, catching flies. Wow. And I keep telling her that we've got to get her up here, so that she and I, because I came up with just a metaphor. Well, it's not even a metaphor; it's the truth. Everything here was underwater. All these mountains were underwater, and eventually they were pushed up and then began being weathered away. And so there's a trail that I love to walk here, and it runs. It's an old railroad track, narrow gauge railroad track, and it runs about 2.5 miles downgrade to the second oldest river on Earth.
Which is
the New River. Isn't that ironic? It's the last remnant of the old Tays River, which was the massive river across Pangaea. Mm-hmm. And there are parts of the old riverbed that are dry now. And Tays Valley, West Virginia, is part of the old Tays River Valley, but the wet part is the New River. And you can walk through something more than 300... You can walk through 300 million years of Earth's history to the bottom of a primordial sea and never get your feet wet.
You know, and that's all the substance of where we come from. I mean, we have such great potential to be so much more than what we are, you know?
Yeah.
That was beautiful. I appreciate you, yeah,
it's part of why I have developed a renewed appreciation. I've spent so much time. I've spent the last 20 years of my life, Jude, dedicated to trying to the best of my futile or not futile but small abilities to save this place or to save some part of this place. As you know, there are parts of this state and parts of this region that the scientists tell us will never be part of a viable ecosystem for 300,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have enough time to sit around and watch other parts of this place be made into the same nightmare hellscape. But the part that I happen to live in, although it has been tormented, and although the very ground itself is full of abandoned, of the abandoned, blown up, blasted, suffocated dead, thousands of human beings. They could be under your feet at any step you take around here. The land itself is so exquisitely beautiful. It's like I've said several times, I've tried to readjust my attitude to a certain extent. I drive across that magnificent bridge, that engineering marvel, almost every day of my life. And I try to be present enough when I'm doing it that while I'm trying to keep my eyes on the road, I also treat myself to a glance to either side and just a moment of unmitigated
radiance.
Wonder. And
yeah,
I pick up what Kurt Vonnegut said. He said we need to spend more time saying, well, if this isn't nice, what is?
Yes.
And so there are so many things that are so wrong with this place, but the things that are right have to be cherished and held and taken into spirit. And you just the fact that I am flying in the air above the second oldest river in the world that's 876 feet below me in a chasm that was carved by nothing more than water over rocks. And that will stop you where you stand. And there are places you can go to where there's no guardrails. And you get to this place and you look out and you are on the precipice, again, of that vast chasm.
And I have to stop you for a second. Robin, I have to stop you for a second. That's the exact sense of being enfolded when I put those boots down and I stand in an intention. That's the same kind. I don't have a visual, but I understand that I have Mount Rainier that I look at that is unbelievably majestic. And not to take off from what you're discussing, but I say amen to that. It is, that's what feeds us. When you and Todd and I were talking one time, we got into about the real ether, you know, the substance of the ether that feeds us. And your love for where you are and knowing about, I never knew about that second river. And yet you can come on every single night and bring up all these dark, shaded kinds of things going on and still have a life that continues to flourish. That, dear heart, is what sustains the community, as distant as we might be miles apart. It's, you know, again, like Todd, we talk about collective consciousness, and not to take you away, but I had to share that. That was beautiful.
No, I'm glad you did. I mean, in point of fact, I'm so thoroughly enamored, in the truest sense of the word, as in love with this place, that you know, I want to share it with the people who are dearest, some of the people who are dearest with me, and that's the people who have been engaging in this conversation for almost 20 years. That's why I want to do the horn in that I've been talking about for so many years, and maybe June of next year, and you know. And cook, well, you know, just like the Molloy weekend was, you know, bunch of people, maybe they've never met in person before, but they will become fast friends within 20 minutes because they know each other, even though they've never set eyes on each other in living, breathing space.
Mm-hmm.
One of the quintessential, most fundamental, and I think Todd was talking about this last night, one of the most fundamental things that we do as human beings is we feed each other.
Yes, yeah, we become nourishment, you know.
We make actual food and we give food to each other. And that is the way that from the moment we achieved whatever it is that constitutes our consciousness, that's one of the most essential ways that we have perpetuated our species and our humanity.
Mm-hmm.
In food. And that's why we wrap so much meaning around how we make our food and what we make it of and who we share it with. Because it's a nurturing openness.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea when I sat down to begin this program this evening. I knew that I would be going through a catalog and a litany of frustration and anger and pain, and lo and behold, I'm not there anymore. And instead of talking about the things that kill us and the things that make us ache and suffer, we're talking instead about ways that we can break that cycle, that we can find happiness, we can find joy, we can find one of the most important and underappreciated of sensations, and that is simple contentment, the ability to sit in a place and just breathe.
Well, let me thank you for that. Yes, that's my whole concept, that I give people breathe. Just how ridiculously simple is that? But it gets everything moving.
And when that contentment washes over me, or over anyone, I won't speak for anyone, I can only speak for myself. But when that sense of contentment happens, anything can be accomplished.
Mm-hmm. And it's almost like it becomes the ground for something next. In my life right now, there's some huge, significant, big things going on. But I don't take on tomorrow. I become present with you right now. And that kind of substance and what feeds me, then no matter what happens, I know that I'm standing where I'm supposed to be. I'm clear, I'm focused, kind of tired, a little older, but
I think Scott in San Diego has referenced it from time to time. He talks about on a metaphysical level, it's like standing in front of that big board in the mall, and there's a little X, and there's a sticker next to it with an arrow pointing to it that says "You are here." if we can adopt that, you are here. You're not somewhere else. Here is where you are. And there is a cultural reference, in white European concepts, we have north, south, east, and west. There are four cardinal points on the compass. But some cultures have a fifth cardinal point. And that is a dot in the center of that compass rose. And that dot is here, now, this instant. I don't have any tattoos. I may get one. I don't know. Never have. But I saw an episode of Tony Bourdain's channel, or show, once. And he'd been to Japan several times, but this was the most profound episode he'd ever done, as far as I was concerned. And he was dining in, they were cooking, he and his host and a couple of other people, they were cooking over the hearth fire of a traditional Japanese home. Out in the woods, way off in the woods. And it was beautiful. And I think maybe somebody had a tattoo of these Japanese characters. And it translated, and I'm probably mispronouncing it horribly, but it was Ichyo Ichie. And that has stayed with me from the moment I saw it. Because...
Means?
Well, it's Ichyo Ichie, and it takes so many more words to conceptualize in English. But it translates as roughly, this moment, right here, right now, forever, never again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's a conceptualization of absolute presence. And I love it.
I'm getting used to our rhythm, so I deeply apologize if I interject. I'm trying to get your rhythm of, you know, you being able to express everything. You and Todd and so many of the others blend, but we're two women trying to blend with each other.
Oh, Jude,
forgive
don't
me.
No, it's also the limitations of the technology. Okay, it's the limit. It's limited because it cannot be as perfect as two people sitting face to face. But I must note, I'm a white girl. I have no rhythm. Sorry, I can't resist.
I'm a white girl and I do, but I have grandchildren that surround me and stand with their beautiful, just like the, you know, if you could see a photo of Manuel Ellis, you know, that case here.
I did see. You know,
yeah, what a beautiful, radiant man. What a beautiful, you know, that smile, you know, that whole kind of essence. And well, gosh, Robin, there's so many things that I hope I haven't stopped any of your flow.
You haven't. I think this was, given all the hell and damnation that took up the first 2 hours of the program, I think this is more than appropriate, I hope for more than just you and me, cleansing and helpful.
I do too.
And in its own right, beautiful. And in point of fact, I actually one of the things that I'm doing is I'm trying to be not just more present to myself, but I'm trying to be more present with my community, and I'm trying to do a better job of giving back. I've been giving back for a long, long time in some regards, but I'm trying to sort of expand that universe. And so I've got a meeting I have to attend in about 18 minutes. So I was going to close the program a little bit early just so I could get to it. It's virtual, it's remote, but it's at,
oh, no,
8,
that's fine.
It's at 8 p.m. And so this is perfect.
Robin, you've been more than gracious with your time.
Oh, no. I mean, well, this is perfect. This was absolutely, your call was perfectly timed, perfectly placed, perfect in every form.
Then let it be. Thanks so much, Gerhard.
Oh, thank you, Jude. I cannot thank you enough. It's fascinating for me because I don't run off into I don't run into flights of, I mean, I do self examine, but I don't do it on this air.
I feel honored.
Well, I am. This happened because you felt something that made it made itself manifest to you that it needed to happen.
Because it was just the two of us talking and nobody else knows what we talked about. So it's perfect. except for Megan and Jeremy.
Except for a few thousand people. I mean, right.
Oh, anyway, my best and peace, love, and hope. And talk to you soon.
Oh, thank you, Jude. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful evening and enjoy the coming sunset.
I shall.
Bye now. Jude is special and unique and has been in my life for a very long time, and I'm so grateful. Like I said, I'm going to make this meeting, and we will, well, Friday on the front porch tomorrow. And so we've got a fighting chance at finishing May, and that's awesome. Thanks to everybody who jumped in this evening. Thank you. Thank you so kindly for the challenge to Joey and Giraffe. And thank you to Jude for joining in the effort via Women Standing. Thank you, Jeremy, in Vermont. And thank you, Lila. Thanks all so much. And our lone subscriber for the 27th day of the month, thank you, Robert, in Australia. Melbourne, got to say it fast so the flies don't get in. Got it. And thanks to each and every one of you who keeps this program on the air via your subscriptions at Patreon or PayPal, via your a la carte gifts. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Brand new Fresh Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is, of course, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. This would be a great time to reach out to your member of Congress and ask them to please co-sponsor H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. It means the world to Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Stay safe. Get your vaccine whenever you can if you haven't already. Try to push this country toward that 70% number. Meantime, wear your mask around people. Wear your mask if you don't know everybody's vaccinated. Don't touch your face. Wash your hands. Use your hand sanitizer. Maintain your social distance as appropriate. And for God's sakes, if somebody comes toward you saying, "You're suffocating them children," avoid that person like the plague. Because he is. Later.